In our last episode, we considered Francis of Assisi and the monastic order that followed him, the Franciscans. Now we're going to take a look at the other great mendicant order of that time, officially called the Order of Preachers, better known to us as the Dominicans, named for their founder, Dominic de Guzman. Dominic was born in Calaruga, in the region of Old Castile, Spain, in 1170. His mother was pious and named him after a local saint who served as the abbot of a nearby monastery in Silos a century before. An early biographer says that Dominic's mother was barren, went to the abbey at Silos in hopes that a miracle would allow her to have a child. When she became pregnant, she decided if the child was a boy that she would name him after the monastery's storied and saintly abbot. Well, the legend goes that while there in Silos seeking her miracle, she had a vision of a dog leaping from her womb with a torch in its mouth. The dog ran to and fro across the earth, setting it on fire. All this plays into Dominic's career and the name of the order that he founded, the Dominicans, which sounds like the Latin Dominicanus, which is dog of the Lord. That image ends up being a kind of, well, logo for the Dominicans. Dominic received his early education from his uncle, a priest, before attending the University of Palencia. During his university years, Dominic demonstrated both academic excellence and extraordinary compassion. One story says that during a severe famine, Dominic sold the books that he regarded as precious to help feed the poor. Books of that time were made of parchment made of animal skins. He said, quote, "I could not bear to prize dead skins when living skins were starving and in need," unquote. At the age of 25, Dominic joined the cathedral chapter of Osma, living under the rule of St. Augustine. What he learned there influenced how he organized the order that would later be founded by him. 10 years later, a pivotal moment occurred when he accompanied his bishop on a diplomatic mission through southern France. They encountered the Cathar heresy, which was spreading rapidly throughout that region at that time. Now, the Cathars held dualistic beliefs reminiscent of ancient Gnosticism. They separated the material and spiritual worlds, considering the former evil, the later good. This encounter of the Cathars deeply affected Dominic, who judged the church's traditional methods of combating heresy as ineffective in this case. The luxury and pomp of Catholic clergy contrasted sharply with the austere lifestyle of Cathars, undermining the church's message to them. Dominic's innovative response was to fight heresy not with the force of civil government, but by persuasion and example. He adopted a life of voluntary poverty, traveling on foot and engaging in public debates with Cathar leaders. His approach to refuting error combined intellectual rigor, simple living, and a humble sensitivity to people's needs. In a word, Dominic was a pastor who aimed to protect God's flock from the dangerous predations of wolfish false teachers. Now, this method of dealing with the Cathars proved remarkably effective. Dominic understood that to combat heresy successfully, preachers needed both solid theological training and genuine humility, which he thought was best expressed by Francis's embracing of mendicancy. That is, you'll remember, voluntary poverty. All of this was fundamental to the soon-to-be-founded Dominican Order's character. We're going to come back to the Cathars in a later episode. In 1213, Dominic visited Rome during the Fourth Lateran Council, and he was encouraged by Pope Innocent III in his apologetic work, but was refused in his request to start a new monastic order. The Pope suggested that he instead join one of the existing orders. Since a Pope's suggestion is really a command, Dominic chose the Augustinians. Dominic's Cathar converts were his most zealous supporters. They wanted to be enlisted in a resistance to their one-time fellow Cathars. In 1215, to assist their cause, the Bishop of Toulouse gave Dominic a sixth of the diocesan tithes to continue his work. Another supporter gave Dominic a house in Toulouse so that he could live and work at the center of the controversy. But Dominic envisioned a group of educated preachers who would spread the gospel. He returned to Rome a year later, staying for half a year. The new Pope Honorius III granted his petition to start a new order. Originally called the Order of Preachers, it was the first religious community dedicated to preaching. The order grew rapidly in the 13th century, gaining 15,000 members and over 500 houses by the end of the century. The order's most innovative features included, 1, an emphasis on study and preaching. 2, a democratic governance by elected superiors. 3, a flexible approach to their vowed poverty so that it wouldn't hinder their priority as preachers of the gospel. The order's plan was revolutionary. Dominic created the first religious order to make theological education central to its mission. The Dominicans took the contemplative aspects of the monastery out into daily life in the world. To the priority of prayer, which you'll remember was at the very core of a monk's life, was added preaching that by the Dominicans. Dominic's lasting contribution was his emphasis on education. He sent his friars to study at the great universities of Europe, establishing houses near major academic centers. This commitment to learning helped create some of the medieval period's greatest scholars, including Albertus Magnus and Thomas Aquinas. The Dominican system emphasized, first, systematic theological study, second, training in preaching and argumentation, third, integration of faith and reason, and fourth, the development of critical thinking skills. This educational model proved so successful that it influenced the development of modern university education, especially in the realms of theology and philosophy, but of course bleeding over into all the other disciplines as well. And Dominic began sending monks to start colonies in other areas. The order quickly took root in Paris, Bologna, and Rome. Dominic returned to Spain, where in 1218, he established separate communities for men and women. Now, from France, the Dominicans launched into Germany. They quickly established themselves in Cologne, Worms, Strasbourg, Basel, and some other cities. In 1221, the order was introduced in England and at once settled into Oxford. The Blackfriars Bridge in London carries in its name the memory of their priory there. Dominic lacked the warm, passionate concern for the poor and the needy that had marked his contemporary Francis. But if Francis was devoted to Lady Poverty, Dominic was pledged to Sir Truth. If Francis and Dominic were part of a cruise ship's crew, Francis would be the activities director, Dominic the lawyer. An old story illustrates the contrast between these two. Interrupted in his studies by the chirping of a sparrow, Dominic caught it and plucked it. Francis, on the other hand, is revered for his tender compassion and care for all things. To this day, he's represented in art with a bird perched on his shoulder. Dominic was resolute in purpose, zealous in propagating theological orthodoxy, and devoted to the church and its hierarchy. His influence continues through the organization that he created. Dominic died at Bologna in August of 1221. His tomb is decorated by the artwork of Nicholas of Pisa and Michelangelo. Compared to the speedy recognition of Francis as a saint only 2 years after his death, Dominic's took 13 years. Still a quick canonization. At the time of Dominic's death, the preaching monks, or friars as they were called, had 60 monasteries and converts scattered across Europe. A few years later, they'd pressed into Jerusalem and deep into the north. Because the Dominicans were the Vatican's preaching authority, they received numerous privileges to carry out their mission any and everywhere. Mendicancy, that is, begging as a means of support, was made the rule of the Dominican order in 1220, just a year before he died. Dominic was impressed by Francis' example and made his order mendicants as well. But mendicancy was never regarded as a founding principle of their order, as it had been for the Franciscans. The obligation of corporate poverty was revoked in 1477. Dominic's last exhortation to his followers was that they should love, serve humbly, and live in poverty. But it seems all of that was set aside not long after he was out of the picture. Unlike Francis, Dominic didn't require manual labor from the members of the order. He substituted study and preaching for labor. The Dominicans were the first monastics to adopt rules for studying. When Dominic founded his monastery in Paris and sent 17 of his order to staff it, he told them to, quote, study and preach, unquote. A theological course of 4 years in philosophy and theology was required before a license was granted to preach, and 3 years more of theological study followed that. Preaching and the saving of souls were defined as the chief aim of the order. No one was permitted to preach outside the cloister until he was 25 years of age, and they were not to receive money or other gifts for preaching except food. Vincent Ferrer and Savonarola were the most renowned of the Dominican preachers of the Middle Ages. The mission of the Dominicans was mostly to the upper classes. They were the patrician order, if you will, among the monastics. Dominic would likely have been just one more nameless priest among thousands of the Middle Ages, had it not been for that fateful trip to southern France where he encountered the Cathars. He had heard of them back in Spain, but it was their popularity in France that provoked him. He saw and heard nothing among the heretics that he knew some good, solid teaching and preaching couldn't correct. He was the right man, the right time, doing the right thing. At first, his success at answering the errors of the Cathars gained him support that pressed him to step up his opposition to error. That opposition would turn, well, sinister and into what is arguably one of the darkest spots on church history, the Inquisition. Though hundreds of years have passed, the word still causes shivers of terror in most people. Dante said of Dominic that he was, quote, good to his friends, but dreadful to his enemies, unquote. We're going to take a closer look at the Inquisition in a later episode, but for now, let me say this. In 1232, the conduct of the Inquisition was committed to the care of the Dominicans. Northern France, Spain, and Germany all fell to their lot. The stern Torquemada was a Dominican, and the atrocious measures which he employed to spy out and punish theological and ecclesiastical dissent left an indelible blot on the order. As mentioned earlier, the order's device or emblem was a dog with a lighted torch in its mouth. The dog represented the call to watch, the torch, to illuminate the world. A painting in their convent in Florence represents the place that the order came to occupy as hunters of heretics. It portrays dogs dressed in Dominican colors chasing away heretic foxes. All the while, the Pope and Emperor, enthroned and surrounded by counselors, looks on with satisfaction. As we end this episode, let's review how the mendicants differed from previous monasteries and monks. First, the mendicant orders of friars differed from previous monastics in that they were committed not just to individual, but to corporate poverty. The mendicant houses drew no income from rents or property. They depended on charity. Second, while till the Franciscans and Dominicans, monks lived in cloistered communities, keeping mostly to themselves until it was time to conduct business with the outside world, the friars weren't sequestered in monastic communes. Their task was to be out and about in the world preaching the gospel. Because all of European society was deemed to be Christian, the mendicants took the entire world as their parish. Their cloister wasn't the halls of a monastery or a convent, it was the public marketplace. Third, the rise of universities at this time presented both the Franciscans and Dominicans with new opportunities to get the gospel message out by educating Europe's future generations. Fourth, the mendicants promoted a renewal of piety by the tertiaries. That's those third level orders that they set up, which allowed lay people an opportunity to attend a kind of, well, monk camp, if you will. Fifth, the mendicant orders were directly answerable to the Pope rather than local bishops or intermediaries who often used orders of monks to their own political and economic ends. Sixth, the friars composed an order and organization of more than a specific house as the previous orders had done. Before the mendicants, monks and nuns joined a convent or a monastery. Their identity was wrapped up in that specific cloister. The mendicants joined an order that was spread over dozens of houses. Monks' obedience was not to the local abbot or abbess, but to the order's leader. Now, besides the Dominicans and the Franciscans, other mendicant orders were the Carmelites, who began as hermits in the Holy Land in the 12th century, also the Hermits of St. Augustine, and the Servites, who'd begun under the Augustinian rule in the 13th century, but became mendicants in the 15th century.